Morning. Today's daf in Shavuos is Mem Gimel. We're in Mem Beis Amud Beis. We are a little bit short of the Mishnah. We are starting on the words in the Gemara. Mimasas Mukmas Laka Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Obviously, that means we are in the middle of a discussion. Yesterday, the Gemara in the bottom of Mem Beis Amud Aleph was trying to make heads and tails of the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off by saying that Ein Mashpia Nesek. I'm sorry. That if you have a claim made by a minor or a chereshota, somebody who's mentally incompetent, so you don't have to address that claim, you don't have to respond to that claim, and more significantly, as we're learning Masechta Shavuos, you don't have to make a shvuah to such a claim. Such a claim is not significant enough to warrant a shvuah. On the other hand, the Mishnah then went on to say, "Ishban lekatan, you make a shvuah to a katan." So obviously the Mishnah is confounding, and that the Mishnah sets two rules up that are lechara against one another. So do we make a shvuah to a katan or do we not make a shvuah to a katan? So that was the question that we dealt with yesterday. And so far we have one proposed answer which we are finishing up. The one proposed answer of the Gemara is the Mishnah over here is representing a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Chachamim in the following scenario. Let's say that you go over to a, you go over not to the principal lender, died. But you go over to the son of the principal lender and you say, look, here's a story. I borrowed from your father and I paid him already part of the loan, but I owe him the second half of the loan. So you are now a modem and mixus. What modem and mixus is what the Gemara described yesterday is taltanis atzmo, meaning that there was no claim made against you. You're the one who produced the claim. So under such circumstances, is there going to be a shvuah of modem and mixus, yes or no? So that was the question. And why is it now going to be a machlokus as to whether or not you're going to make a shvuah, you're not going to make a shvuah, meaning is this or is this not a case of modem and mixus? So what the Gemara proposed yesterday is that this is exactly the machlokas, meaning, what is the lumdus, what's the svar behind modem and mixus? So the Gemara here says, meaning on Mem Beis, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia, and the Gemara is also a couple of other places, but the Gemara says that ein adam eiz bifnei bachova, because we start off with the following assumption. That if I'm looking at my principal lender and I'm staring him right in the eye, there's no way I'm going to deny the entire loan. I will not have that much chutzpah. That's just simply too much chutzpah for a human being to have. So therefore, what I'm going to now do is, if I denied everything, I'm telling the truth, because I wouldn't have that much chutzpah. So what I'm doing now is I'm going to try to make a partial claim. Partial claim, really, it's a stall tactic, because I'm really just buying time. Because really, what I like to do is I like to pay the rest. And what the Torah says to you is, no, you know what? I know you're a good guy. You know you're trying to stall for time. Make a shvuah now. In other words, admit that you owe the remainder of the obligation now. That is the that's the basic svar behind modem and mixas. And now the question amongst the Tanaim is this idea of ein adam eiz bifnei bachovo. Is that true for the principal lender? That's certainly true for the principal lender. Is that also true for the child of the principal lender? Are you going to have that kind of chutzpah for the son of the lender who inherited the obligation, who inherited the debt? So I say inherited the debt, meaning on the lending side, meaning right, he's owed the money now. So are we going to say the same thing regarding the child of Ein Adam Eiz? The Gemara says that's a machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So that is one proposed answer of the Gemara. And in order to make this proposed answer, so obviously what we need to do is we need to set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So the Gemara says, "Umi matzis mukvas laka Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hakatani reisha." The Gemara says, "But wait one second. Now we're just picking it up right where we left off yesterday. So now you're telling me that our mission is to go on like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but the Gemara says that's very difficult because consider manalaba biyadecha. So let's say the Mishnah. Mishnah goes over the following scenario where the Mishnah says that I owed your father money, a money, 100 zuz, and ein lecha biyadi al chamishim dinar. But the truth of the matter is that I only need to pay 50. Why? Because patur bim neshem eshev aveda. Because there it's a shavas aveda. So in other words, clearly in the Mishnah is adopting the position of the Chachamim, not of Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Meaning that anytime you make any admission to the child, even a partial admission, you're not going to be making a shvuah. Why? Because the Shavas Aveda. What does that mean? What do you mean, Hashavas Aveda? Meaning that you'll be prepared, if necessary, to deny everything. Since you're in a position where you're ready to deny everything, you could, or I should say better, you could deny everything. So now, anything you admit to, that's a gift. In other words, that is considered that falls under the category of Hashavas Aveda, meaning the Takana of Hashavas Aveda. As a result of that, you're not going to need to make a Shvua. That's the Mishnah. So you're telling me that the Mishnah, the latter part of the Mishnah, following like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, can't be. The first part of the Mishnah clearly is not going like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. So the Gemara tries to make a distinction. Hasam de lo amar barili, hachad amar barili. So the Gemara says, well, it depends. In the Reisha, where it says pater, so the orphan is not saying, I know for sure about this obligation. Meaning, I say orphan, really the child. Meaning, he is an orphan, but the child doesn't really have any kind of, any real knowledge about this obligation. And basically now, as far as the son of the lender is concerned, he's basically saying to the borrower, look, I didn't know about this. And now you're telling me about this loan. Basically, I'm in your hands. Meaning, you tell me how much you owe. You tell me how much the loan was. You tell me how much you owe. And certainly, there's no shvuah of modim b'miksas. However, in the latter portion of the Mishnah, where we're making a shvuah to a katan, so what's the case over there? Barili, where the katan says to the borrower, look, Dad and I spoke. I know what's going on. I know you borrowed money. I know how much money you borrowed. I know how much you paid back. So in other words, barili. So under those circumstances, so then it's no longer falls under the category of Meshav Aveda. It now falls under the category of Moda B'Mikzas, and therefore you're going to make a Shvua. Okay. So that is one proposed answer of our Mishnah, meaning again, the confounding information of the Mishnah, which is, on one hand, the Mishnah says you don't make a Shvua to a Katan. On the other hand, the latter part of the Mishnah says you do make a Shvua to a Katan. And so right now, we're saying that the Mishnah is going like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, who in principle says that you are going to make a Shvua on the to the katan, unless he doesn't really have any knowledge about the loan. Shmuel amar lekatan lipar minichse katan and lehektish lipar minichse hektish. Shmuel says, let's give another pshat in the Mishnah, an altogether different pshat. In that we're not talking about paying the katan. We're talking about extracting payment from a katan, meaning the katan owes you, and you're now going to collect from the katan. Now you're holding a note. So in other words, so you're a note holder. So that means obviously you owe the money. Even if the principal borrower died, you still owe the money. You're now going to go after the estate. So you're of course owe the money. And what we're going to be learning together now is that when you're going to be collecting from the estate, you, even with a note, you're going to have to make a shvua. Same thing is true regarding Hektish. If you're coming to collect from Hektish, so you need to make a shvua. So Gemara goes over both these points. The Gemara says we learned this already in the Mishnah. Or I should say better, we're going to learn this together in the Mishnah. This is on, what's today? Today's Wednesday. Okay, this is on Friday's daf. So, Minichli is some Parela Bishua. So, the Mishnah says that when you're coming to collect from the estate, so you the only way that you can receive payments is only with a Shua. Meaning, even though you have a note, and even though the note obviously is clear proof that you owe the money, but you're only able to collect only with a Shua. As we're going to be discussing on Friday, the reason being is because, despite the fact that you have a note, but still, the estate doesn't know what's going on, meaning the father who borrowed the money, he obviously knows what's going on, and so for him, from the father's standpoint, yes, of course I owe the money, and yes, there's a note outstanding against me. But from the estate standpoint, what do they know? So in order to assuage the estate, so therefore the Chachamim require the lender to swear to the estate before collecting. What bothers the Gemara now is that if you're saying that that's pshat in our Mishnah, so then we have a Mishnah here. We have a Mishnah on Friday's daf. Meaning, why would the Mishnah need to repeat the same point twice? Tarti lamali. So the Gemara says, so why have that? Hakamash blanke d'abai kashisha. So the Gemara says, coming to teach us the following point. Did tini abai kashisha, right? The older abaye. Okay. Obviously, the Mishnah is saying the Gemara is saying this as a point of differentiation. But Yisomim Sharmu Gedolim. I'm sorry, Yisomim Sharmu Gedolim. So when we're talking about orphans, we mean even adults. And it goes without saying that even minors as well. Bein l'shvua, bein l'ziboris. Whether as it relates to the halacha of shvua, meaning that there's a shvua requirement, even if you're collecting from the estate, even if the estate right now is being represented by adult children, you still have to make a shvua. And the same thing is true regarding ziboris, meaning that when you collect from the estate, in terms of the grade property that you receive, you're not receiving the grade A, nor you're receiving the grade B property, you're receiving the grade C property. When you're coming and collecting from the estate, normally, in terms of lending, borrowing and lending, the Mishnah Gittin, the fifth parak, tells us that a lender is entitled to grade B property, that a malva gets beinonis, but that's true when you're collecting from the principal borrower. When you're collecting from the estate, So you only collect C property, not B property. Anyway, so that is why the Mishnah needs to repeat it, because the Mishnah wants to reinforce the idea that when you're collecting from the estate, you have to make a shvuah. Even when you have a note, you have to make a shvuah. And even if the estate is represented by adult children. Next, lehektesh. Lipar minichse hektesh. You're coming to collect from nichse hektesh. Now, obviously, this is very strange. Why are you collecting from hektesh? If it's in the property of the hektesh, so how can you collect from that? So the Gemara says, minichas mishabanim leipar ele b'shvuah. Ah. So in other words, you had a lien on the property. Meaning what happened was is that you had a lien on property, and then the owner of the property dedicated it to Hektesh, and so now you go over to Hektesh and you say to Hektesh, look, I have a pre-existing lien on this property. Meaning I know he dedicated it to you, I know he was makdish the property, but truth of the matter is it's my lien. It wasn't his to give to you. It was my lien on that property. It's my property. And so now you're coming from to collect from Hektesh, and now what we're learning together is that you have to make a shvuah. So the Gemara says, okay, but in other words, it's Meshubad, but what's the difference? So it's the Rech. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why I would have thought otherwise. When you're collecting from a hedgeot, so we're worried about people having some sort of funny business. So in other words, perhaps he wasn't really owed the property. Perhaps it was just a way of getting the property out of the hands of the Lekuchos. And so therefore, he's lying. He's making up a story in terms of the property being owed to him. But the truth of the matter is he's not owed the property. So therefore, a shvuah is necessary in order to make sure that there's no kind of foul play or nothing there. Aval hektesh dein adam osa kenunya la hektesh. But imagine going to the base of Mikdash. And really, it's not your property. And really, you don't have a lien on the property. And now you're going to make up a story in order to extract property out of the hands of Hektesh? Meaning, is that something we really need to be concerned about? You're holding a note. The note clearly states that you have a lien on the property. And we're worried about funny business against Hektesh? So Kamash Malan. So the Gemara gives us an unfortunate Kamash Malan, which is, yeah, here as well. And so therefore, you're going to make a shvuah even when you're collecting from Hektesh.
He doesn't own it
fully. Right, and how could it be that meaning people sell properties even though there's a lien on the property? It's the same thing when you're giving to Hektesh, you're just simply moving it over from your rishus over to Hektesh's rishus. But now, as Hektesh being the owner of the property, it was not free and clear. Okay. Yeah. Right. The Hamar Rav Huna Shchimei Rashi Hektesh Kol Nechasav. Now the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem, of course, is that we have a statement of Rav Huna, which is that if you have a Shchiv Meirah and he's dying, and now he is allocating his assets, so he says, you know what, my kids don't need it, thank God, I'm giving everything over to Hektesh, or maybe his kids do need it, but in either event. So, and he's giving it over to Hektesh, but then after gifting everything over to Hektesh, he says, oh, wait one second. He then says, you know, not everything is mine to give to Hektesh. And then he clearly delineates which parcel, which land should not be going to Hektesh. And what do we say over there? What did Rav Huna say over there? Good. We believe every word he says. And we're not worried about any kind of kenunya. So no kind of funny business. So what bothers the Gemara now is that clearly Rav Huna is operating with the assumption that when Hektesh is involved in the transaction, we're not worried about kenunya. And meanwhile, we just said that if you're a lien holder trying to collect your property from Hektesh, you must make a shvuah before collecting. Why? Because we're worried about funny business. So the Gemara says, Amri hani milish chimera deina demchotiv alo. Avagabi bari vade chayshinan. But the Gemara answers, look, when somebody's dying, so right now, what do you want to say? He's going to lie? People lie when they stand to benefit. People are not going to lie so that other people stand to benefit. So he's dying. So for him and his last will and testament, his instructions, so there, if he's not going to be benefiting, we're going to believe every word he said. And if he says, oh, wait one second, not everything goes to Hektesh, that parcel of land belongs to so-and-so, of course we're going to believe him. And we're not worried about kenunya. And then the truth of the matter is that this halacha really shouldn't be specific to Hektesh. It should be true, you know, for other circumstances as well. But anyway, but under those circumstances, we're not going to be concerned. But if the person himself is there and he's collecting and he's benefiting And even though he's got a note, and even though he's a lien holder, but still, unfortunately, we're worried about Kenunya, and so therefore he has to make a shvua before he collects from Hekdesh. Ad Khan, that brings us to the end of the sugya, and we begin the Mishnah. The Mishnah is on Mem Beis Amid Aleph. Sorry. Mem Beis Amid Beis. Eilu Dvarim She'enish Bayim Alehem. So now, the Mishnah over here gives us a list of things that you do not make a shvua. Avadim Vashars Vakarkos Vahekdeshos. You do not make a shvua on slaves, notes, IOUs, property, and Hekdesh. Ein Bahem Tashlum Mekefa Volo Tashlum Arba V'chamisha. Additional to that, any of these items are not subject to the kefal payment in the event of theft. They're not subject to dal vehei, the punitive fine in the event of after stealing it, either shechting it or selling it, which is normally has a punitive fine of dal vehei, 4 to 5 times the amount, depending on the size of the animal. So these items that we just listed are not subject to those to that knas. Shomachinam eino nishba, a shomachinam does not make a shua. No seisachar eino mishalem. Someone who is hired does not pay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and this will explain better later on. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kashmir Shachai Bachri Yosem Nishbay Malayim. Rabbi Shimon says that when it comes to Kachim, where I have personal liability, so then I do make a shvua on them. V'sheinu Chai Bachri Yosem Nishbay Malayim. However, if I do not have personal liability for them, I do not make a shvua on them. What does that mean, personal liability? Like, for example, the case of a neder, where this carbon for me, even though it's not mine, the carbon doesn't belong to me. Once I dedicate it as a carbon, it belongs to the base of Mikdash. But in the event that I lose it, so then I am personally liable for it. This is what in halacha is called a davar hagorim lamamon. Davar hagorim lamamon kamamon, something that in itself is not money. But to you, however, it represents money in that if you lose it, you're going to have to pay for it. So Rabbi Shimon throughout Shas is of the opinion that a davar garam lamamon is kimamon. It's treated like money. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, you're going to make a shua on a carbon that you have personal liability. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yeshvarim Shein Bikarka. Sorry. Yeah. Yeshvarim Shein Bikarka ve'enam kikarka. There are those things which are in the ground but are not treated like karka. Ve'en chacham imodim lo, but the chacham do not agree to Rabbi Meir. Ketzad. An example, also can find him tonus masarti lach. Let's say we have a ton and a niton, the plaintiff and the defendant. The plaintiff says, "You know what I gave over to you to watch was 10 vines, and they were laden with grapes." V'hala amra'inam ela chamesh. And the defendant says, "No, you didn't give me 10 vines; you gave me 5, and they're only 5. So this is a case of modu b'mixas. However, it's a case of modu b'mixas on property." Rabbi Meir mechayiv shvua v'chachamim omrim kol mechubah l'karka arei k'karka. So Rabbi Meir says that you're chayiv shvua. And the chachamim say, no, it's mechubah l'karka, it's connected to the ground. Therefore, it's the status of karka, and therefore you don't make a shvua. Stay tuned. The Gemara later on, we'll discuss this in a little more detail. Einish b'ayin ala adav v'shebemidah v'shebemishkol v'shebeminyan. Another requirement of modu b'mixas, and that is, it has to be quantifiable. The Mishnah says in order for there to be a shvua of modu b'mixas, it has to be something that has a quantity, a measurable quantity to it. Ketzad. Bais male masarti lach v'kis male masarti lach v'hala amreni yodeya ela mashi nachta ata notel pater. Let's say, for example, the plaintiff says, you know what you owe me? You owe me a house full of grain. And the defendant says, nah, it wasn't full. So here now, we're not talking about quantity. We're talking about, you know, a guesstimate. You know, the house was full. Nah, the house wasn't full. So there's no shvua modu b'mixas because we're not talking about something with a numeric quantity to it. Ze omar adziz v'ze omar adchalon chayiv. However, if let's say in the house that was a silo, right? I say a house. A silo probably is a better example. But let's say you had a silo and the plaintiff says, you know, it was filled up to the ziz. The ziz is a crossbeam on the top of the house. So in other words, the wheat went all the way up to the crossbeam. So in other words, he's measuring it. I understand, not using a number, but using a actual measuring stick. I mean that here literally, meaning the grain was up to the top crossbeam of the house. And the defendant says, no, right, you did ask me to wash the wheat. That part's true. But it only went up to the windowsill. It didn't go any higher. So they're chayev. So there, even though they're not using numbers, but they're using actual levels, measuring levels, so that's the case of modu b'mixas, and therefore you're going to be chayev. Okay. So far, the Mishnah over here in summary is basically a list of cases in which you're not going to be making a shvua, and then those cases that are open for debate. The Gemara over here starts off with just drushos and psukim, right? Which obviously, you know, it's important that the basis of the drushos that got us to the Mishnah. Tashlumi kefal minalan. How do I know that these things are not subject to the kefal payment? Meaning, in the event of geneva. Now, remember, a ganav who himself elects to return the item back to the nignav, to the victim, he's not going to be paying kefal. Kefal is only in the circumstance where he was caught with the item. In the event that the person's caught with the item, so he has to pay kefal. Also, towing time is ganav, right? I'm just going over the Gemara's and Baba Kama that we did some time ago, right? Towing time is ganav. In other words, if let's say he was a shomer, and his claim was that it was stolen from him, and he lied, and it's not true, and he was caught in the lie. That's also a kefal opportunity. So what we learned back in the Mishnah is that you don't pay kefal on avadim sharis karkaros vehekdeshos. They are not subject to kefal. How? Why not? Tanu Rabbanan. So the Gemara quotes it as a drasha. Akolt avar pesha. We are in Parshas Mishpatim. You know there are three parshios in a row in Parshas Mishpatim. Actually, that's the shomer. We'll get to the shomer in just a moment. I'm sorry. We're there, but right now we're talking about kefal. So, akol davar pesha klal, ashur v'achomor v'alsevel sama prat, akol aveda chazav klal. So we have now a classic limud of klal prat klal, and just I'm reading on in the Gemara, klal prat klal yata dan elakin apram before shavra mitatov v'gufo mamon, av kol davar mitatov v'gufo mamon. So just like the examples given between the two klalim are something which has intrinsic value and are movables, yatsu karkoshe matautalin. So karka obviously is not immovable, therefore it's not subject to kefal. Yatsu avanim shuk shul karkos. Eved and karka are mukash to one another. There's a hekesh connecting the two. And yatsu shtar shafa pishe matautalin gufa mamon. And a note, although it's immovable, it doesn't have intrinsic value. It only represents value, but it does not have intrinsic value. And hektish, and how do I know that hektish is also excluded from kefal? Re'ehu ksiv. Because the Torah says re'ehu. Re'ehu means to your friend. Meaning only when you steal from your friend are you chayv kefal. Next, v'lo arba v'chamisha, my taima. Tashlum arba v'chamisha, merchman v'lo tashlum eshlosh v'arba. Yeah. Once kefal is excluded, so now there's not going to be dal v'hei. Why? Because once you take out kefal, so then that means then that's not going to be dal v'hei. It's only going to be gimel v'dalet. And the knas is only going to be in a scenario in which it is dal v'hei, and not anything less than that. Shomer chinam eino nishba. Now we're up to the shomer. Okay, so now I can say this. In Parshas Mishpatim, you have three parshios of shomerim in a row. The one that is perfectly clear is Shoal. The Torah actually identifies the third one being the Shoal. What's Parsha number one? What's Parsha number two? So the first Parsha is Shomer Chinam. Second Parsha is Shomer Sachar. That's not clearly identified in the Torah. Mashain, can we know that? Right? Rashi over here quotes the Gemara B'Metziah. But anyway, we know. We know the first Parsha is Shomer Chinam. And that's what we're quoting from right now. We're on the very top of Men Gimel Amud Aleph. Ki Yitein Yishal Re'ehu Klal. Kesev O'Kelem Prat. Lishmur Chazav Eklal. Klal prat du klal. So once again, the format of the psukim falls under the classic drasha. I atadan elakein aprat. And you look at the examples. Ma aprat mefurish davar mitalta v'gufa mamon. Av kol davar mitalta v'gufa mamon. So therefore, in the case of shomer chinam, where the either ones or geneva or aveda, and now the nifkad says to the mafkid, look, I'm really sorry. I lost it. It was stolen. Ones, right? In other words, something that will, something which will exempt him from having to pay. So you look at the examples that are given in the Torah, and you look at the character traits of those examples. So yatsu karkaos shem etaltin, yatsu avadim shukshul karkaos, yatsu shtaros, shafa pishem etaltin, engufa mamon. So just like we said regarding kefal, we're saying the same thing regarding shvua shomrim, specifically shomer chinam. It has to be something which is movable and has intrinsic value. Excluding land, excluding avadim, excluding notes. Hekdesh, and as far as the exclusion of hekdesh is concerned, re'ehu ksiv. In the parsha of Shomer Chinam, it says the word re'ehu, which means that it has to be from an individual to an individual, not to hekdesh. Next, we're just going to do the same thing with the very next parsha in the Torah. No, say sachar and mashalim minal tanu rabbanan. Ki yitein ishal re'ehu klal chamor o shor o se prat. V'chol behema lishmor chazer uklal. Klal uprat uklal. V'chule ad hektesh re'ehu ksiv. And at this point in time, the Gemara realizes that we get it. Meaning, you look at the examples, you look at the character traits of the examples, The characteristics of the examples are movables with intrinsic value, and just like we said regarding Shomer Chinam, we're saying the same thing now regarding Shomer Sachar as well. Back to the Gemara. Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Rav Meir Omer Yesh Tvarim Shein Kikarka, Shein Kikarka Ve'enam Kikarka. Things that are in the ground but are not treated like the ground. Michlal de Rabbi Meir Sever called Mechubel Karka Enu Kikarka. So the Gemara says, now what is the svar behind Rav Meir? Is it that even though it's connected to the ground, it's not part of the ground? The Gemara says it can't be that simple. Because because why are we talking about why are we arguing in the Mishnah about vines that have grapes on them? Just talk about the vines themselves. So the Gemara says over here, as it says a number of other places, that we're talking about where the grapes were ripe, ready to be harvested. And now Kol HaOmed, one of the more classic discussions throughout Shas, and that is, that's Rabbi Shimon. It's normally very good. I was thinking the same thing. Normally it's that Shitas Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara here ascribes it to Rabbi Meir. And then just one more thought I had on this is that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon were both Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, but that's speculation. But anyway, so so now the grapes are ripe, ready to be harvested. And we get on to the classic discussion of Rameir Savar, Kibitzuras Damyan, Rabbanan Savar Lo Kibitzuras Damyan. And now that the grapes are connected to the ground but ready to be harvested, so what do we look at? It's not hard to predict a forecast that we're going to harvest the grapes. And therefore, one way to look at them is that it's Ki'ilu, they're already harvested. And therefore, they're Metaltlin. And that's Shitas Rav Meir. And the Chachamim say, okay, but that's future. Currently, they're connected to the ground. Therefore, they have the status of Karka. Next part of the Mishnah is that a basic rule regarding Moda B'Mixas is that it has to be that the Ton and Nitan are arguing with something that is quantifiable. Amar Abay Loshana El Adam Alei Bait Stam. Ava Amar Alei Bait Zeh Malei Yediya Tanisa. So Abaye says, look, in the Mishnah, they give an example of something which is not quantifiable, not something which is numeric, and that is a houseful. Where the Tohen says, I gave you a houseful of grain. And the Nitan says, nah, it wasn't a houseful. So there, that's not something which is quantifiable. However, says Abaye, if I say Bait Zeh, and I point to the house, so that is quantifiable. Amalei Ravi Yachyad Nisefa Zeh Omer Al Ziz Vezeh Omer Al Chalon, Chayav Liflog Velisne Bedida. So Rava says to Abaye, I don't agree with you. Because consider, if you're right that there's a difference between Bait Stam versus Bait Zeh, so you know how the Mishnayos work. If the Mishnah could make a sharp distinction, the Mishnah would much prefer to make a sharper distinction rather than move on to another scenario. According to you, Abaye, the Mishnah had such a missed opportunity. The Mishnah could have contrasted the case of Bayis Stam versus Bayis Zeh, and the Mishnah didn't do that. Lisna b'didam. B'medvar mamorim b'bayis malev b'bayis zeh malei chayev. The Mishnah could have made that very sharp and crisp distinction. The Mishnah didn't. Rava therefore says, I don't agree. Ela amar Rava, so Rava says, rather, la'olam enu chayev ad shiit anenu b'davar shebemino shebemishkol shebeminyan. V'yoda la b'davar shebemido shebemishkol shebeminyan. Rava says, look, if I'm saying a houseful is not specific. In fact, Tosis over here goes on to point out, when you say a houseful is not specific? Because my definition of a full house may not be the same as your definition of a full house. Tosos writes, Tosos 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 Tosos on the Amud. Right? Tosos Divra Maska Lama Rava. Just drop to the V'yesh Lamer. Yesh Lamer Debeshein Chaser El Ma'at Makri Malaya. V'yadu Ma Beinayim. Inami Beinim Shiyaskir Midabo Daso. A couple of Pshatim of Tosos, but the first Pshat of Tosos is, look, when I say the house was full, what does that mean? Meaning, full meaning all the way up to the very top. Full could just simply mean mostly up to the top. Meaning even if I say Bait Zeh, we're still not really clear about what the towing is, what the nitan is. It has to be that we're talking about something that is measurable. Tanya Kavasi the Rava the Gemara here quotes the Braisa clearly supporting Rava. If let's say the claim is you owe me a core. Core is 30 saw. It's a volume. It's a measured volume. So you owe me a core, and the counter argument is I don't owe you anything. That's kofer bakol, no shvua min haTorah. Menorah gedola yesh li biyadecha, ein lecha biyadi ela menorah katana pater. I say, I gave you to watch a big menorah. The counter argument was, no, it was a small menorah. So under those circumstances, pater. Big menorah, small menorah, two different items. Azura gedola, yesh li biyadecha, en lecha biyadi, ela azura ketana pater. I gave you a big belt to watch. The defendant says it was a small belt. Once again, big belt, small belt, that's not me'ein atayna, they're two different items. Ava amala kurtzvo, yesh li biyadecha, v'alamer, en lecha biyadi, ela lesech chayev. The claim is I gave you a core. The counterclaim is no lesach, half a core, 15 saw. That's more than mixas your chayev. Menorah bas eser litrin yesh li biyadecha. If let's say I said a menorah which is 10 litrin, litrin is a weight, and ein lecha biyadi ela bas chamesh litrin, the menorah you gave menorah that's 5 litrin chayev. That under those circumstances that's more than mixas. Stay tuned. You're probably wondering that doesn't sound like more than mixas. Those are two different menorahs. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that very question. Klal shel davar la'olam enu chayv ad shi tanenu bedavar shebemida shebemishkal shebeminyan v'yodala bedavar shebemida ushebemishkal ushebeminyan. Period. The Brisa says, it's only mode to mix us if it's something which is quantifiable, something measurable, something quantifiable. Exactly what Rava said. Continues the Gemara. Klal shel davar la'asui yemai. Now in the Brisa it said klal shel davar. Lav lasuye by ze malay, and it must be coming to include even Rava's scenario of by ze, where I point to a particular house and that's still considered something which is not quantifiable. Ma'ishna menor gadol umenor ketana, ma'ishatano lo hadolo ma'ishodolo latano. Here the Gemara asked a question which you probably were wondering. In the case where we were talking about a big menorah and a small menorah, now the Braisa had two cases: one where it was a big menorah, small menorah. Apples and oranges, not modeh b'miksas. But then the Gemara talked about a case of a 10-pound menorah and a 5-pound menorah. Isn't that the same thing? And the Gemara asked exactly that question. Ihachi bas eser bas chamish nami, mashatana loho delo mashah delo tano. It's the same thing. It's the same point. They're two different items. It's not modeh b'miksas. Amar Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak kach b'menorah shechulio saskinan dekamodele mina. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's a segmented menorah. Okay, I know this is not what the Gemara means, but it helps us understand it's like a Lego menorah. So you're talking about a Lego menorah, and we're talking about the pieces. And so now, yeah. In other words, I'm telling you it's a 1,000-piece Lego menorah, and the other person says, no, it was a 500-piece Lego menorah. That's more to be mixas. So so the Gemara says, now, if that's the ukimta, we could do the same thing with belts. Now, usually, my belt is made out of one piece. So, it was a thing where they had these segmented belts. In other words, then basically you had these like pieces of leather, and they were stitched together. And so, if we're talking about a segmented menorah, we could also be talking about a segmented belt. And so, therefore, that would also be a case of modeh b'miksas. Ella delayfi lo ketani hachnami b'shachulios lo ketani. But you notice, however, that the Braisa didn't entertain segmented belts. And therefore, the Gemara now argues, and therefore the Braisa didn't entertain a segmented menorah. Ela amar Rabbi Abba bar Mamma shani menorah hol v'yachol ligaro la'amida chamish litrin. Interesting. The Gemara says, okay, you're right. It's not talking about a segmented menorah. So how can a claim of a 10-pound menorah with a counterclaim of a 5-pound menorah be considered modeh b'miksas? Suggest the Gemara. When I say suggest, meaning this is the only answer. So it's more than a suggestion. Suggest the Gemara that what you can do is you can take a 10-pound menorah, you could shave it, and whittle it all down to a 5-pound menorah. Rashi even goes so far to say, well, can't you do that with a belt as well? Rashi says no. Last Rashi before the Mishnah. Well, first Rashi explains, if I'm saying big menorah and small menorah, so that's really apples and oranges. But if I'm saying 10-pound versus 5-pound, so we could do this. We can whittle away at the 10-pound menorah, making it a 5-pound menorah. Rashi says, why by belts can't we make the same point? Uve azura like lemimer chatach hemenu share rasheha nikarin, because it's going to be clearly recognizable where I had a finished belt and now I'm just going to basically trim it. So now it's a smaller belt. It's obviously been trimmed. Mashenke, when you're talking about metal, so the guy knows what he's doing. The smith knows what he's doing. So he could knock off 5 pounds, and it would look like a finished product. Okay. We are on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. We are now at the next Mishnah. Let me introduce. Okay. If I'm lending against collateral, so that means that I'm going to take your collateral. It's called an halacha mashkon, and obviously the purpose of me holding on to a mashkon is basically it serves as security against the loan. I know that's obvious. Okay. All right. Good. And in the event of a default, so now I'm in good shape. I got something for my loan. Okay. While I'm holding on to a mashkon, what kind of shomer am I? Mm-hmm. It's a good question. But right. So we'll talk tomorrow about the fact that I'm kona the mashkon. That's tomorrow's daf. Right now, however, as a holder of a mashkon, what level of shmir do I have? So the Gemara says, and it's going to be very clear, I'm a shomer sachar. Right? Shomer sachar meaning I'm a hired watchman. Right? In other words, obviously I'm not getting paid to watch it, but there's an inherent benefit in holding onto it because it serves as security against the loan. Okay, so I'm a shomer sachar, which means now as a shomer sachar that on this mashkon, if a onus were to occur to it, okay, I'm exempt. But gneva va'aveda, if the item was stolen or if the item was lost, I'm on the hook. I have to pay. So even though the mashkon was there to serve me, but on the other hand, if I lost the item or if it's stolen from me, so now I got to pay the lofa for the mashkon. And so with that all in mind, so here we have now an interesting scenario in which it's a loan against the mashkon, and now the mashkon was lost. And so we are going to have now four different scenarios in the Mishnah where we have claims and counterclaims from the lender to the borrower, from the borrower to the lender. Now, who's the claimant? It's going to be really simple. Right? It's going to be based on who's owed money. And that, of course, is going to be based on the value of the collateral against the value of the loan. Right. Sometimes the collateral could be more than the loan. Sometimes the collateral could be less than the loan. There's no requirement that the collateral has to be the same amount of the loan. We're going to be talking at the end of today's daf, more probably tomorrow's daf, about what happens when the lender takes something which clearly is not the value of the loan, but we'll save that discussion till later. But in the meantime, however, so we're going to have now a number of scenarios, four in total in the Mishnah, where we have claims made by, in the first two cases of the Mishnah, the lender against the borrower, and the second two cases of the Mishnah, the borrower against the lender. Let's see all this inside. Hamavis chaver el hamashkon, you lend against the mashkon, v'avad hamashkon. And now the lender loses the mashkon. Amar lo selahi v'sechalav, v'shekel hayashaveh. So the lender says to the borrower, look, I lent you a sela. And the value of the mashkon was only a shekel. A shekel is half of a sela. So that means to say the lender saying to the borrower, look, I'm really sorry, but okay. In other words, we'll knock that off the loan. So now you owe me a shekel. V'hala omer. Now the borrower says to the lender, lo, ki ela sela visani alav, v'sela hayashaveh. And the borrower says to the lender, no, you got that wrong. The loan amount you got right. You did lend me a sela. And the collateral that I gave you was valued at a sela. So how much do I owe you? Nothing. In other words, they offset one another. The loan and the collateral are offsetting, so I owe you nothing. In halacha, what do we call this? It's a kofar bakol, meaning that the lender is making a claim against the borrower. In other words, because his assessment is that there's a shekel difference between loan and collateral in his favor, the borrower says to the lender, no, there is no discrepancy. Therefore, I owe you nothing. In halacha, this is kofar bakol. Min haTorah, there's no shvua. Sela pater. The lender says to the borrower, I lent you a sela, and I lost your mashkon. And your mashkon was valued at a sela v'sichala v'shekel ayashava. And it was valued at a shekel. V'hala omer, and the borrower says, lo, ki ela sela v'sani alav v'shlosha dinarim hayashava. So, look, you're right about the loan amount. The loan amount was a sela, but Shlosha dinarim hayashava, but the collateral was worth 3 dinarim, and so therefore not like you say it was only valued at a shekel. It was valued at 3 dinarim. So under these circumstances, now the borrower is admitting to part of the claim. In halacha, we call this modem mixas, and therefore you're going to be chayiv. Okay, so those are the first two cases of the Mishnah. Basically, it comes out that in case number one, the lov is kofar bakol. In case number two, he's making a partial admission. Now we move on to the next two cases of the Mishnah, and here the borrower is now making a claim against the lender. Because in these next two cases, the collateral is going to be viewed as greater than the loan amount. The bar says to the lender, look, you lent me a seller. I gave you a two seller collateral. And the lender says to the borrower, you're right about the loan amount. You're wrong about the value of the collateral. The value of the collateral was not two seller. The value of the collateral was only one seller. Otherwise stated, I owe you nothing, potter. That's kofer bekol, you're potter. So in the fourth case of the Mishnah, the borrower says to the lender, you lent me a seller, and it was worth two salayim. And vahala omer loki ala seller v'sicha lav. So again, the lender says to the borrower, you're right about the loan amount. It was a seller. V'chamishi dinarim hayashaveh. But in terms of what the value of the collateral was, the value of the collateral was five dinarim. So it means to say that I only owe you one dinar, not the one seller that you claim. So chayev. Under these circumstances, you're going to be chayev because the lender is admitting to part of the claim. Moda b'miksas.
In that first case, can the borrower ask for the difference?
In case number three. Right. In case number three, the lender is saying that the value of the collateral was equal to the value of the loan. So it's a full denial on his part that he owes anything. Right. The borrower is asking for the difference. The lender is just simply rejecting the value of the collateral. Okay. Rejecting his version of the value of the collateral. Okay. Minishba, who makes a shvua? Misha bikadun etzlo, the one who's holding onto the bikadun, otherwise known as the malveh. Now, when the Gemara asks the question, who's making the Shavua, there are four cases in the Mishnah. Now, in cases one and three, there is no Shavua, because it's Kofar Bakol. So there are really only two candidates in the Mishnah in terms of when the Mishnah is asking the question, who's making the Shavua? It's either case number two or case number four. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to make that point very clear.
Who is it considered the Tohen in any case?
It's very simple. The one who feels that they're owed money.
Based on that.
In the first two cases of the Mishnah, the lender feels that the loan amount was greater than the collateral. In the last two cases, the borrower feels that the collateral was greater than the loan amount.
So they the defender should be the one who's what the drinks should be taken.
Okay, fine. So when the Mishnah's asking the question, who makes the Shvua? So we need to clarify, which the Gemara is going to do, which case in the Mishnah are we talking about? So Misha Bikadon Etzlo, so the Mishnah says the one who's holding onto the Bikadon, which of course is a Malva, that's the lender. He's holding the collateral. He was holding the collateral. Shema Yishav Ezevi Yotzei Alas Bikadon. Why? Why does he make a Shavua? So that I'll just read and translate the Mishnah, but in just a moment we're going to understand the Mishnah a lot better. Says the Mishnah, because what's going to happen is that in the event that the borrower swears as to the value of the collateral, and then the lender all of a sudden realizes, oh, wait one second, I have it. And then he takes it out. And knowing that whatever the borrower said was the value of the collateral is not its value, and now he's going to basically show up the borrower. Oh, you think it was that much? And you swore that it was that much? Here it is. It's not that much. And there goes the credibility of the borrower. There, he's no longer able to give edus. He's no longer able to make a shvua. His entire reputation now has been ruined. Therefore, says the Mishnah, have the malva make the shvua. Again, which case are we talking about? That needs to be clarified, which we're going to clarify right now. Mem Gimel Amud Beis, top of the Amud. We start with the Gemara Ahaya. The Gemara's question over here, really simple. When the Mishnah asks the question, who's making the shvua, which case are we talking about? Now again, remember, there are four cases in the Mishnah. Cases one and three, there is no shvua, because it's kofar bakol. It's only cases two and four. Ilema seifa, if we're talking about the seifa over here, meaning case number four. So typically, the shvua gabi malva. So what do you mean? When the Mishnah is asking the question, who's making the shvua? In case number four, I don't need to think about it. Meaning, it's obvious who's going to make the shvua. Who's the one making the claim? The lova, in case number four. Because the lova feels that the loan was for a seller, the collateral is two salayim, and so now the borrower is the toein, the malva is the nitan, he's the defendant, so of course he's going to be making the shvua. I don't need to ask the question, who's making the shvua in case number four? It's obvious just on the basic rules of toin v'nitan. Who's the claimant? Who's the defendant? The borrower's the claimant. The lender's the defendant, so obviously he's going to make the shvua, and that doesn't require a question, a Q&A. So when the Mishnah is asking the Q&A of who's making the shvua, it must be talking about case number 2. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. So typically, the shvua gabe milva, amar shmua, aresha, v'chein amar b'chia barav, aresha, v'chein amar v'yochanan, aresha. So a collection of amarayim all realize it's case number 2. My resha, sefer deresha. And the Gemara just makes that point even clearer. It's the sefer deresha, meaning case number 2. Sela v'sicha alav. So again, the lender now is the towing. He's saying to the borrower, look, I lent you a sela. V'shekel hayashave. And the collateral was only worth shekel, half the amount. V'hala amar lo ki ala sela v'sinei alav v'shoshit dinarim hayashave. And the borrower says to the lender, you didn't lend me a sela, but you're wrong about the collateral. It wasn't worth a shekel, half the sela. It's worth 3 dinarim. But in other words, but you're right. I owe you a little bit. I owe you a dinar. So chayev. Deshvua gabe lovehi. Now let's think this through. So who's the towing? Who's making the claim? The lender. Who's the defendant? The borrower. Because the borrower was the one who made a partial admission to the amount that was demanded of him. Now who should be making the shvua? Oh, now you understand. The lovish is the one who should be making the shvua, because he's the defendant now. The claim is being made against him. Now, he should be making the shvua. And here's what the Chachamim did, as the Gemara is about to explain. The Chachamim said that in this particular scenario, we're going to flip the shvua from the lover to the malva. Why would we do that? And now we get to listen to the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, v'shaklu rabbanim mi lover, v'shajua al malva. And the Chachamim took the shvua away from the lover and put it on the malva. And the reason why is because exactly what the Mishnah taught us. Because if we're going to have the lover make the shvua, he'll swear to what he thought was the value of the collateral. It's not in his hands right now. It may be in the malva's hands. And then when the malva hears the number, malva's like, oh, I got him. And then the malva's going to take out the collateral, prove him wrong. So you know what? The Chachamim recognized that this is a problem, so they flipped the shvua over to the malva. Now the Gemara says, but we have to go one step further on this discussion. Because Rav Ashi taught us back in B'Metzia, that really the truth of the matter is in this case, it's really a double shvua. Both parties are going to be making the shvua, the lova and the malva. The malva is going to be making a shvua that's not in his possession. Why is he making such a shvua? Why would the rabbis institute such a shvua? Because when the malva was given the collateral, so there is a chance, there's a possibility that he may develop a relationship with that collateral. See, right? He looks at it, he's like, oh, I know it's security against the loan, but wait a second. Nice. That's a good item. You know what I'll do? It's so easy to rationalize. In other words, I'll just simply claim that it was lost or stolen, and we'll just knock it off the loan. Meaning, I'm not stealing from him. Meaning, all right, I'm gonna pay for it. So the Chachamim said, if we realize that that's a Yetzahara, so we therefore have the Malva swearing that's not in his possession. We're also going to have the Lova make the Shua, understandably, because he's a defendant in this case. So now that Rav Ashi told us back in B'Metzia that really the truth of the matter is both of making the Shua, so then how do you understand the Mishnah? When the Mishnah asks the question of who makes the Shua? Hachi kamar, minishba tchila. Ah, very good. So what the Mishnah now is really teaching us is they're both going to make a Shua, but who shoots first? Right? Which one of them is going to be making a shvua first? Misha pikadon that flow. Shemisha v'zev yosi alasi pikadon. So now we're going to have the malva making the shvua first because we don't want the lova to be in the position where he's swearing to the value of the item and the malva all of a sudden finds the item. Oh, really? You think it's worth that much? Here it is. Right? So first we have the malva swearing that's not in his possession. Now we say to the lova, okay, now you swear how much you thought its value was, and now we'll go forward from there.
Why are we protecting the one that in the second case? The Mishnah says we are protecting him because we don't want to ruin his reputation. But he was lying already. So why?
Who's lying? What?
He says we wanted to. The Mishnah says I'm going to protect his reputation for future. The one that's claiming.
When you have two claims, then we don't assume any one of them is a liar, meaning they're right now there's a claim and there's a counterclaim. There's no assumption of lying. Each one of them has a perspective of what's happening on. I know there is a truth, But right now, as we're dealing with the case, the Lava feels it was worth this much, the Malva feels it was worth this much. Okay, so in other words, and the defendant has now the ability to make a shvua to that effect. But in other words, no, at this juncture, no one's lying. In other words, you have claims. Okay, I'll stop over here tomorrow, pick it up. I'm a Shmuel, and right in the middle of the Amud.